Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
It is time to go on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug Matthews is in studio with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. And a lot of you traveling, one of the busiest, if not the busiest, travel weekend of the year. I know it certainly is for airports. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Same to you all. Good to be here.
We should remind, for the holiday weekend, you will have a live show Saturday morning, 9 to 11, for Forklift Systems Football Saturday. For Tennessee and Vandy, you will be live at Double Dogs.
Double Dogs down in the Hillsborough Village, right across from...
It's a nice spot.
It is. It's very nice. The Hill Center there, boy, has that changed since I was in school over here many years ago. And for people who don't know who it is, everybody knows where Pancake Pantry is. It's kind of catty corner,
okay,
as my mother used to say.
You'll be doing your show live from Double Dogs. They're opening early. Some people may be asking that. They will be open for Doug's show. And then you can go into Double Dogs, hang out, and watch everyone lined up across the back of the building for Pancake Pantry.
That's exactly right. Some things never change.
That's right.
So, Coach, we were just having this discussion on Derek Mason and sort of the Vanderbilt job. And you were uniquely qualified to talk about that Vanderbilt job and what it means to Vanderbilt people to beat Tennessee. We had a guy call in and said, well, you know, it doesn't really matter because this is the three of the worst years in Tennessee football history that they're going to win. And I understand what he's saying, but it still means a lot to Vanderbilt. How important, specifically for Coach Mason, would it be to win this game three straight times at the end of what's, let's face it, it's been a disappointing season with a veteran team to be 5-6 right now going into this game?
Well, I don't know the exact history of years in a row, but I'd have to believe that... three in a row would have to go...
First time since 1926, where Vandy won seven straight and General Nealon was hired the next year in response to that those seven straight wins for Vandy.
Well, he actually was hired in 1925 and his assistant, but I can understand you.
He was elevated after that, I think.
He was elevated. By the way, this is a great story to tell. He came as an assistant to Coach Banks. I forget Banks is ML or had some initials.
AW, was that it?
I don't think it was. But anyway, he, as 1925, and after the 1925 season, Coach Banks left to take another job, what he considered a better job, and he left the University of Tennessee. Do you know what job he took?
No.
The head coach at Central High School in Knoxville.
Wow.
So he left the head job at the University of Tennessee, became the head high school coach at Central High in Knoxville. And that's how General Nealon, who I believe was a captain at the time, was moved into the head spot. So, you know, you never know. You never know.
How important is it, though, for Derek Mason to win this game?
Well, I think it's important, but, you know, I don't sense that Derek Mason is in any trouble over there at all. I think if you set back anybody who sets back, and I'm talking about people who make these decisions and looks at the whole situation, he's done a really, I think, excellent job there. If you look at what he's been able to do, this job's completely different than it was before division play. When I played there and when Coach Pace was there and other coaches, you played six conference games. Now you play eight. So that means there's two less games, obviously, that you can schedule. Now we, you know, was it playing 10 and 11 back at that time? But I think he's done a good job there. People who really follow this conference from a coaching standpoint and also competition standpoint, you know, Vanderbilt's, you know, they're in the bottom half from a competitive standpoint every year. But they've been able to rise above that and do better on a couple of different instances. And, you know, the old, I hate hearing it when I hear people say, well, so-and-so was down. That's the thing I used to get from some of my Alabama friends. Seems like every time Tennessee beats Alabama, Alabama's got a terrible coach. You know, because they get beat by Tennessee. And then when they beat Tennessee, Tennessee's got a great coach. You know what I mean? So I don't like that old, hey, if you win, you win. You probably lose some that you should win, and you probably win some that you shouldn't. But I don't sense he's in a whole lot of problem over there. I don't know exactly what they're going to do athletic director-wise. I've heard several different things on that. I don't know that they know, or at least they haven't made it very public. But Vanderbilt is – I meet every once a month, every the last Monday of every month with some guys I played ball with, about 8 or 10 of us, and a few other people that played there. Everybody understands the direction that Vanderbilt Athletics is heading in. They're going to try to be very good at the things that they believe they can be very good in: basketball, baseball, women's basketball, some of the other sports. Tennis, soccer, things like that. That's the direction they're heading in. They're never going to say that, but they're not trying to be competitive in the SEC. I don't say that from a critical standpoint. That's just the way the facts of the matter on it are, and that's why they're not going to pour the money into stadiums and other things that they could pour them into. That's the decision that they've made. I think most people that have ever been associated with the football program fully understand that.
If you're the rest of the SEC, you can't spend Vanderbilt's money for them. But is that an acceptable explanation for a school that is benefiting from every other SEC program and revenue sharing, that they're going to accept that check and basically say what David Williams said with us, and you're right. He said, I would like to ask the new AD if he's going to tier the different sports where one's more important than the other, because I didn't do that. Every sport was equal in my eyes, and I think football fans in the South hear that and they kind of grimace because they're thinking, well, this is the SEC. This sport makes a lot of money. You need to put some importance on football.
Chad, it's really not the athletic director's decision. This is a decision that's made way above that athletic director's pay grade. It's been made by the administration. It was made that way 50 years ago when I was playing there. And it's been made that way every year. I can't tell you the number of times that I heard and read and was told that we're going to go through a 5-year plan for football. And again, most people that I know that played there and coached and has coached there realize that and have accepted that. So that's why I think if you have a Derek Mason, I don't know who's going to come in and do a better job than he's done. I think he's done a fine job there. I mean, I was at that game. You were at the game, the Ole Miss game. Ole Miss probably a little bit better, but very competitive, and Vanderbilt ended up winning that ball game. So but it's not the athletic director's decision. It's much higher than the athletic director. It goes all the way up to the chancellor and the board of trust. That's the way that Vanderbilt wants it. For one, don't have a problem with that, because that's what they've decided. That's what that university has decided to do, and they're following through on. You can see what happens when what happened with Coach Corbin. You bring in a great coach. I don't know if they knew he was going to be a great coach, but he is a great coach. They saw the way it helped the university, and so look at the facilities over there now. So obviously, they don't believe that the investment in the football program would bring that kind of return, and they might be right. I don't know, but it's it's all way above anybody in the athletic department. Most people, and I include myself as one, you want to see Vanderbilt do well in football, but football people know that that's probably not going to be a probability, because they're not going to be fighting on the same level as other schools in this league are.
One more for you before we start to preview Vanderbilt and Tennessee on Saturday. Were you surprised that the catch was overturned by A.J. Brown for Ole Miss in that overtime?
It was, I don't know if surprised. I
was surprised when they called it a touchdown on the field. I was shocked that they went back and overturned that, because it appeared to me that he had 2 feet down, he hit the ground, he extended the ball willingly with his hand, and then it got knocked out as he was extending it on the ground.
You know, the way that they look at those, number one, I am not one who they look at it and they make a decision. You know, it's black and white. It's either there or it's not there. So, but it was one certainly that could go either way, and they decided to go that way with it. But it was we see a few of those every year. You know, is the heel down? Is the hand across? Is the ball across the goal line? I wonder what that call would have been though without the aid of replay. Here's one thing that the officials tell me, the SEC officials and people that run them. You know, now they're given, they really kind of like the replay because it lets them make a call or not make a call depending on the instance, knowing that it's going to be, you know, reviewed at down in Birmingham. So, but it was a, you know, again, for Vanderbilt, it was a very timely call, and for Ole Miss, obviously it wasn't.
How would you describe the two programs just going into this week? How different are the two teams right now between Vanderbilt and Tennessee?
You talking about in terms of
not personnel, but just momentum and expectation and the direction they're headed?
Well, clearly, for obvious reasons, Vanderbilt has built a program. They have players that Coach Mason has all recruited. His staff has been relatively the same, certainly had some leave. And I think he has his system in place, what they want to do. And I like what they're doing offensively. I like what they're doing on defensively. I think they are doing certainly offensively about what they probably need to do in this league. And defensively, they're playing a really solid defense that can really, with good field position, that's what they had against Ole Miss. They made Ole Miss drive the ball. Ole Miss had one long run for a touchdown, about an 80-yarder, when they had a missed tackle on a man coverage. But I think they're doing the system that is right for Vanderbilt. Tennessee building a program. I'm going to be doing the show, by the way, Sunday show, and probably this week or next week. You know, I've really dug into Tennessee and who they have coming back and what the potential for next year is going to be. And I think people are going to be surprised. I believe that Tennessee will be better, and in a couple of cases, significantly better in every position area except the defensive front. And again, I'm going to get into that, I think, a good bit Sunday on why. But Tennessee is in much better shape than they've shown this year because of some personnel things that are happening and will happen. A lot of the teaching that goes in place with that. I've been confident about Tennessee really since I've been able to watch about four or five practices last spring and this fall, and I haven't been to a practice since season started. But I've been a pretty strong advocate of where this head football coach and his staff is taking this group as a teaching, and I see him getting better and better and better. You know, what happened last week, I've been on several teams that happen like that, where you really think you're getting better, and you are, and then all of a sudden, the roof falls in on you. But I think I don't think Missouri had an awful lot to do with that. Missouri was a tough matchup for Tennessee. Vanderbilt's going to be a tough matchup for Tennessee. I don't think they're going to be as tough a matchup as Missouri was. But you look what Vanderbilt likes to do on offense. You look at the style of defense they play. You look at where Tennessee's not real strong. This is a very good matchup for Vanderbilt, I think.
Is there any doubt now, if you're a Tennessee person, you're watching that game, as to why Jarrett Garantano is the starting quarterback when you see some of the limitations for Keller Chris? And it was a difficult spot to come into that game where he was. Started out really well, but as the game progressed, you can see the difference in arm talent between the two. Was that your takeaway watching him, or what did you think when watching
that
game?
That was my takeaway from the very get-go. Listen, anybody that's not playing, if you listen to what Coach Pruitt says, and not try to parse what he says, because he doesn't leave a whole lot of parsing in there.
He's right to the point.
He's playing everybody. He's been playing them for a long time that he thinks can help win. I think Keller Christ was, I think there's a couple of reasons he was brought in. One reason, he was brought in for pure depth, and boy, has he been needed. I don't know if they thought he was going to win the job or not win the job. I know he had a great opportunity to win it, but there's no question that Jarrett Garantano is the best quarterback up there, and I think he's a very fine quarterback. I mean, I don't know how many people. I was there with a lot of good quarterbacks. None of them took the beating this kid's taken. And if you think getting knocked on the back of your head and your face driven into the ground two or three times a game is you don't start feeling that after a while, then you haven't played this game. So I think he's done a wonderful job, and I think he's going to be even better next year because they're going to be able to surround him with protection. And the one big criticism that I have is this, and this is with a lot of play callers. This just isn't in this situation with Tennessee's play caller, who, by the way, I think is really coming along as a play caller, too. I like where Tyson Helton's coming from. But so many of these offensive guys, all they think about is routes and plays and getting people open and running five-man patterns and giving you all these different formations, when the very first thing they should be thinking about is protecting that quarterback. I see it in pro ball, too. When you see a guy getting sacked or hit 7, 8, 9, 10 times a game, if I'm the head football coach, if I'm in the pro ball and the owner of a team, I'm going to have that head coach in there and that coordinator in there the next day asking why. Not enough. I talk about this constantly, and I'm probably a little bit too strong on it, but an offensive play starts with protecting, if it's a pass, protecting the quarterback. It does not start with getting up on a grease board or an old chalkboard and drawing up plays and say, we're going to do this, this, and this. You got to protect the quarterback. Tennessee hadn't been able to protect the quarterback, and that's been the biggest problem that they've had. They haven't been able to knock many people off the ball running it either, but primarily where Tennessee gets in trouble is when they drop back to pass. They get their quarterback hit, they get fumbles, they get sacks, they get behind on the six. Tennessee had minus 17 yards total offense in the first quarter. Now think about that. In a whole quarter, minus 17 yards, and most of those came because of sacks.
And they were only down 6-0 at that point. Yeah. It was an odd feeling when Tennessee took a 7-6 lead the way that game was going.
But I think Garantano, they're building around him. They're finding out more and more that things that he can do. This offense, if you really look at it, is starting to get the people in place knowing what they can do and seeing it in ball games. And again, I think we will see a big step next year. I keep reminding everybody, there's two seniors on this team, offensive team. Both of them were grad transfers last year, London and Chris. Every other player returns, going to get some healthy guys back, going to get an infusion of other players. They're going to be stronger. I think this team will be significantly overall better next year. The only area they're losing four defensive front guys, including an outside linebacker and Kongbo, but he hasn't been there much anyway. So other than that area, this team's going to be stronger, and I think a good bit stronger in every area and a good bit better in every area.
In terms of significance, what's the significance for Tennessee winning this game other than the extra practices you get in the bowl game? Outside of fans feeling better about the season, is there any tangible reason to win this game for recruiting purposes or for anything else the program, other than just the fans feel really good about the season if they get to a bowl and beat Vandy this year?
No, I mean, the fact is that you'd like to beat, if you're Tennessee, you'd like to beat Vanderbilt. You'd like to end the season on a win. This isn't going to affect recruiting at all. That's already baked in the cake for the, you know, you get 2 years when you come into a program to recruit. You know, players are going to come because they're not going to come because of how many games you're winning. So I think going to a bowl would be nice from the practice standpoint, but I don't think it's going to affect next year much at all. I really don't. The thing that this team needs to do is get in that weight room for about the next 10 months, get stronger, get physical, more physical, learn the system that they're trying to put in on the offense and defense. And you see them getting better than that on defense. This defensive team has improved from a system standpoint. They're getting more and more familiar and know what Coach Pruitt wants with that defense. I see some of those things on offense too, but you know, it's almost everything, Chad. Now you guys know this because you read and see a lot more than I do. That's all about that's just in the fans' eye view. You know, I hear some things that some fans say, and you just wonder that somebody's got way, way, way too much time on their hands. Or they have an opinion on something. But the fact of the matter is this team this year was always going to be about laying a foundation. It was always going to be about getting players and people doing the right thing That was mandated by the athletic director, and he hired a coach that is certainly following up on that.
Tyson Helton, give me your thoughts on, because you mentioned earlier you like the direction that the play caller offensively is headed. With Helton specifically, how would you evaluate the job he's done through 11 games, and how important is game 12 to everything?
Well, first off, let me say this. I've never had a conversation with him. I've never met him. I've never shook his hand. I've seen him from across the room, and I've watched him work, but I don't know him at all. But if you just look at the progression this year, remembering that he has an offensive line that was maybe decent to start the year with three starters out for a long period of time, but wasn't even decent. So you have to work around that. But I watched what he's done. Number one, he's learned his personnel and what they can do. And I think the last maybe 5 to 6 ball games, he has targeted the players that he wants to get the ball. You can take a couple and argue that they should have thrown the ball more down the field, you know, or maybe should have done this. But he's got counters in the game. He's got misdirection in the game. And I think he's really coming along in that area. What kills you is when you got first and 10, then you got second and 12. Now, all of a sudden, you know, what you would like to do and who you would like to do it with changes a little bit. But remembering this, I don't know exactly. I've said this many times. I don't know the answer to this. But I think I'm pretty close on it. Back 2 years ago and last year before the at the end of the season, the Southern Cal situation, who was calling the plays?
Right.
Tennessee was looking at T. Martin, and at that time T. Martin was calling the plays. And then Tyson Helton was calling the plays. And then his brother, the head football coach, was calling the plays. I don't know who was calling the plays. I don't think Ty Helton was calling the plays. Probably had a lot to do with game plan, as most staffs do. So he came in here, I think he's number one. I think the move to the sideline was a huge move. I said that at that time. I like having coordinators down on the sideline, coordinators and play callers down on the sideline. But I do like the direction he's going in. I think Coach Pruitt likes the direction he's going in. I know Coach Pruitt likes the direction he's going in. So if there's some talk out there about what could happen, that's all talk. If he leaves, I'll say this, it's not going to be because the head football coach wants him to leave.
Okay, so
no doubt in my mind about that.
There's talk that they could make a change. You're saying that's not.
There's not any talk in that athletic department,
okay.
But there's talk, yeah. You know, you hear, I heard this and I heard this. I can tell you this, that he won't leave. If he leaves, it's not going to be by his choice. And I don't think he will, because I think he sees the potential. Listen, somebody's going to get a lot of credit when this thing gets turned around up there. And it's going to get turned around. Now, the head football coach is going to get most of it. It should. But Ty Helton is the only coordinator that is not a head football coach. The head football coach is a defensive coordinator, so he's going to get a lot of credit for this and should, quite frankly, if and when it gets turned around.
Here's something I've thought about this week. There was talk that Pruitt knew every play that was coming from Auburn in that victory on the sideline. He was yelling out the plays to the defense. At halftime, there's word out that at halftime of the Kentucky game, they made adjustments based on some computer model, and they figured out formationally what Kentucky was going to do offensively, and they were able to defend that. Vanderbilt played Alabama last year when Pruitt was the defensive coordinator, and Vanderbilt returned practically every player from that team. So I'm eager to see how Pruitt defensively goes at Vandy, a team that personnel-wise he should be very familiar with before even starting preparations this week.
Well, he does. He'll know about Vanderbilt's offense for sure. I don't know how that. I don't know if that'll be greatly effective. I think
personnel is vastly different. I understand that, but I'm just saying from the understanding.
Well, the system's the same. You got same offensive coordinator, and you got same quarterback, obviously, and you got many of the same players. In many of the areas, so I don't think the scheme's going to be changed much there. But it's the problem that Coach Pruitt has is defensively he doesn't have the players in the
right
positions that's needed. He's a big pressure guy. He's one of the big pressure guys in that offense. There's four or five guys in this league that coach that offense. They all get together. They all talk a lot. And they all call, you know, they grew up kind of together. Kevin Steele being one of them. You've heard me talk about the ones there. But Pruitt's the one that really likes pressure a lot. The problem is you got to have pressure guys at your nickel position. You got to have pressure guys at your corner position. They bring the weak side blitz. And you have to have outside linebacker. He doesn't have those types of players right now. So, therefore, he's not able to do nearly as much of that as he would like to.
It looked to me like Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor got baptized a bit in this conference by some good receivers for Missouri. That's the first game where they looked like they were just beaten one-on-one consistently. Does Vanderbilt have a collection of wide receivers that can beat those guys consistently in this game, or blow the game open with a big player too?
Yeah, they do. They don't have the receivers that Alabama has. Nobody does. Their receivers are completely different than Tennessee's. It's going to be a completely different type of game with one offense on the other. Tennessee's offensive game plan throwing the football is going to be to get it to their big guys in jump ball type areas. Vanderbilt's is going to be quickness and speed, and they have that. They're able to run by you. They'll be able to run by Tennessee. Now, I said they're going to be able to. That doesn't mean they will. And you're right about Thompson and Taylor. Listen, the two positions that you almost always need to be redshirted in college football is the offensive line and the defensive back position. Because in the offensive, on both those positions, you are going against better, more talented players. And you, when you are a defensive back, you're going against more talented players, because if you could catch the ball and were fast, you would be on offense. Defensive backs, from a defensive back perspective. On the offensive side of the ball, if you were an agile, athletic, that could run lineman, you wouldn't be on offense. You would be on defense. So those are the two positions you need to redshirt. I've heard Coach Pruitt say this many times. He said it once directly to me when we were talking about it. Is when he was talking about it at Alabama, they were able to take the really good athletes and redshirt them. Those defensive backs redshirted and started playing when they were redshirted freshmen or redshirted sophomores. Many of them going in the one top two or three rounds. So that's what he needs to get to. Taylor and Thompson in particular, I think you can throw Flowers in there also, another freshman. I think Theo Jackson. Those are four young men that badly need a off-season strength program to get more physical. Most of the tackles that they miss are not tackles because they're not in position. They're missed tackles because they don't have the arm strength or the physical strength. They get run over, or they get an arm tackle run through. Those things were improved. Now, 1 year won't get it all done, but it's going to get a lot of it done. That's why I say this is going to be a completely looking different team next year, I believe.
Bryce Thompson looked good in kick return on special teams. Looks good when he gets the ball in his hands and in interception situations, whatever it may be. Do you think we're going to see more of that, where he's going to get more looks, returning kicks, doing things like that as he progresses?
I don't think we will, no. I think he's back there right now by necessity. You notice he's not back on punt returns. Callaway's back on punt returns. And I think that eventually they'll probably – most return teams want to have somebody back that handles the ball more. They want – I think probably if they had a little bit more depth at running back – Ty Chandler would probably be back there. He's also been nicked up. I think that's the guy they would like to have back there. You know, London's their other return guy back there. Just real quick thing on that. That's a position I played in this league and coached in this league. On a kickoff return, you want somebody that is used to handling the ball. You know, a running back type, a receiver, a big receiver at the worst. You really don't want a defensive back there who is not used to handling the ball. Now, you know, if you got a Deion Sanders, or there are exceptions to that, but you want somebody that's back there used to handling the ball, tucking the ball away, running with body lean. That's what you want on a kickoff return, not necessarily on a punt return, but on a kickoff return you do.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Doug told us prior to the season, Tennessee didn't really need to win more than six games this year.
Oh, Jeremy Pruitt didn't. Jeremy Pruitt didn't. I call it the Jim McElwain complex. Remember what happened to Jim McElwain his first year at Florida?
They went 9-3 or?
Yeah, they won the East.
Yeah.
And what did everybody expect next year?
Winning the East.
10-2.
Yeah, 10, yeah.
11-1. So he's winning about, and he's get six, but, you know, but 5-7, very acceptable. Saw progress. Beat a couple of ranked teams, beat a good SEC team on the road, won two more SEC games. Now let's build on that. You win eight, you win nine, and like most fan bases, this group will be saying, hey, we're going to be better next year. We'll be beating Alabama and Tuscaloosa next year. So he's right where he should be. This program is right where it should be under, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying overall, but
yeah,
under this head football coach.
It's one of those where it's going to be a disappointing finish this season if you get to 5-5 and beat a top 15 ranked Kentucky team and then lose the last two. But when you really take a step back and look back, 5-7 is right around where everyone is. It was going to be 4-8, 5-7, or 6-6 more than likely, and they're going to finish right in the middle. I think the over under was 5.5, which they would finish under that coming into the season if you're looking at it from a Vegas perspective. But coach, I want to ask you about this comment, and you. You've met with this coaching staff. You've watched them in practice. I found this fascinating. If you're a Tennessee fan, you've been into this season because of the chase for a bowl game.
Yeah.
You get that anticipation for one more week. So you got what you wanted. The last game matters in terms of if the season's going to continue or not against Vandy, which is right around where you wanted to be going into the season. But this week, Jeremy Pruitt was asked about playing for pride. You know, are you guys going to play for pride in this game? And he said, well, after we lost to Florida and Georgia, we've been playing for pride every game. This is a guy that is accustomed to winning championships. He just said the moment they were out of the race for the East and lost to those two East rivals and they couldn't win the division, he considered every game playing for pride. That's not a guy who's just playing for a bowl game and thinking, boy, it's important. It's a really different statement than what you heard from previous coaches. And I'm not just picking on Butch Jones, but from previous coaches at UT to come out and say, well, the moment we lost to Georgia, we're playing for pride. What did you take away from that?
Well, I think just that once you lose to Georgia and Florida, you know your likelihood of winning the East is slim and none. When those two beat you, that's one of the realities about Tennessee's schedule. Other programs, their tough games are in November. Tennessee almost always plays Georgia and Florida. Either the first and second or first and third or second, third, early part of the SEC schedule. And again, though, I just know this about it. He knows full well what he wants this program to look like. He knows full well how he believes he can get there. And he knows full well the recruiting, what he's recruiting. Listen, they are so tuned in. They being this coaching staff on the type of player they want at every position. It's not just going out and getting the best athlete. They know what they're looking for at outside linebacker, inside linebacker, quarterback. They know exactly what they're looking for. That's the people they're looking at. There's going to be some players. There's a couple in this state that are going to go to very high profile programs that they're not the type of player that Jeremy Pruitt's looking for. This team is going to be so much bigger physically in the lines of scrimmage, because that is what this head football coach is recruiting. And he's recruiting them because he knows it wins, because he's been at three different programs that have won an awful lot of ball games with those types of players.
Doug, give us your thoughts on the SEC slate this week. Let's start with Alabama-Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Saturday, 2:30. This this is an Iron Bowl where Alabama is favored by 24 points. The anticipation not there as recent years, but it's still the best game on the SEC slate.
Well, what does it take? Well, we said all year long, what does it take to beat Alabama other than being really good? You got to have a quarterback that can put points on the board. And Auburn just, quite frankly, does not have that. What will keep them in the game if they stay in the game is that they are still stout on defense. But I think way too much firepower for Alabama and not nearly enough for Auburn.
Mississippi State Ole Miss is the Egg Bowl is always fun to watch, but that's a game that Mississippi State should win.
Mississippi's problems on the other side of the ball, defense, and it looks like Mississippi State number one is playing really good. They may be the third best team in this league, third or fourth. I'd say them or LSU's right there for the third best team in this league. But Ole Miss they're down a few in numbers. I think the loss last week certainly will hurt them, but this defensively, they simply are not very good at even slowing people down.
And nationally, top 25 matchup Friday night, Oklahoma and West Virginia. That should be a fun game.
Yeah, I kind of like West Virginia for one reason. They are the best defensive team in the Big 12. Now, that's not a ringing endorsement, but they're a good defense. They're not a great defense, but they're a good defense, and I like them in this ball game.
It'll be fun quarterback play in that game too.
Yeah, you're looking at Will Grier. From everything I read, is going to be a top draft choice, mm-hmm. and of course the
Murray.
Kyler Murray's putting up better numbers than Baker Mayfield did a year ago when he won the Heisman. It's amazing.
I've heard a lot of people talking. He ain't Baker Mayfield in my mind, but he's going to be playing. He's going to be playing baseball next year too. So,
Doug, let's remind everyone live at Double Dogs this Saturday morning, 9 to 11 for Forklift Systems Football Saturday. Following Football Saturday, coach to coach with Coach Doug Matthews, Coach Dave McGinnis, and Larry Stone. Always a great show to get you ready for your college football game day. And then Sunday morning, the very best hour-long discussion on Tennessee football. Win or lose, you'll dive and take a deep dive into what happened, good or bad, for the Vols.
Going to hit that, and then also going to start just a little bit why I strongly believe this Tennessee team is going to be significantly better next year. Again, every position except the defensive line, I think, will be better and some significantly better next year.